Hey, it's great to have you here this morning. My name's Kurt. I'm lead pastor here, and great job on that song. You know, this really captures the heart of what we've been talking about throughout this series. And today, we're talking about this whole idea of what it means to have a place at the table. And we're going to be doing things a little bit different today, a little bit more experiential than we typically are, even though we're usually highly experiential. Of course, you probably know that because you have a brown bag in your hands, and you're like, that's not normal in church. Hang on to that. We'll talk about that bag in just a few moments. But really excited you're here with us this morning, whether it's your first time or you're here every week with us. And I just want to pause for a moment and say a prayer for us. Let's do that. God, I'm thankful that we can come into this place. I'm thankful we can come into a place where we can explore things. We can explore you. We can explore what you say about us. And God, I really pray today that you would help us to really get a picture of this invitation that you invite us to. God, I pray that you would help us to not only see this invitation, but to experience it, to taste it, to touch it, to be able to interact with it, and literally to just to go to a new place as we continue to find our way to that place called home. God, I thank you for every single person that's in this room, every relationship, every individual, and I just pray that you meet us wherever we are today in your name. And according to your character, I pray. Amen. We know throughout this series, we've been taking a look at how we oftentimes live in our lives as if we're away from home. And we've been talking about how we all have this thing in common called orphan tendencies. We have these things in our lives that cause us to live in detached ways, in ways where maybe we feel like we have to earn the approval of people that we're around. And this plays out in a number of ways. Sometimes it plays out through approval, which has been a really big through line in this series. Sometimes it's through ambition of me saying, if I can just earn a little more, do a little more, be a little more, then I will be worthy and people will see me as somebody of value. It plays out in our appetites as well. Sometimes we self-medicate through our appetites and we kind of numb the pain of our lives. And these are some of the ways that we try to feel at home. And one of the things we've been exploring over these last few weeks is this invitation that Jesus gives to us, this invitation to go home, this invitation to have a place at the table if we will receive it. Now, this really becomes a dividing line for us in this journey. In fact, there's a dividing line right here that some of us will not be capable of crossing over. And as I say that, you're thinking, oh, I wonder what the dividing line is. Well, here's the dividing line right here. The dividing line is between receiving and earning your place at the table. You see, this table, there's nothing that you can do to earn a place at this table. It's simply because of what Jesus did for us. It's simply by Jesus performing for us. There's nothing we can do on our own merit that allows us to claim a place at this table. And so, we're going to be exploring this, and many of us have been crossing this line over the course of the last weeks. As you've been interacting with your guidebook, as you've been maybe processing internally or independently on your own, you've had some moments where you've said, man, I had no idea that this is what my life looked like and how I seek approval in these ways. Or maybe in your small groups, you had some moments where you've confessed or shared or talked about, I really want to move out of this place that I've been where I'm constantly striving for things to try to show my worth. And you've been making those moments where you realize it's more about receiving than earning. Maybe last week, many of you probably received a key last week as a part of our confession experience. And you stood up and went and got a declaration from a volunteer that was around this auditorium. And they said words to you, you're forgiven, or you are accepted, or you're approved. And for the first time, that's the first time you've ever heard that. Or maybe you did, it just encouraged you. Or maybe through the prayer experience this week, you've had a moment where you crossed the line. Well, the Bible talks about this. In fact, in the book of John chapter 1, here's what we read. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. And so you see, receiving right here is not just the starting place of returning home or having a place at the table. It's actually the only posture by which you and I are capable of having a place at the table. And in fact, that exercise Eric walked you through or told you to kind of begin in your guidebooks, if you didn't complete that a few moments ago, go ahead and take your guidebooks back out. If you've not completed page 70 and 71, we're going to raise the house lights a little bit. I want you to work on those five questions. They're very, very simple questions. But these questions have huge, huge insights into whether we're really capable of receiving or not. In fact, a couple of those questions, how are you at receiving a present? I mean, how are you at receiving, compliments when they come your way? How are you at receiving help when somebody says, hey, can I help you with something? Can I serve you? How do you receive criticism or feedback? These are all really deep questions that get to the core spiritual kind of condition of whether we are even in a place where receiving is something that we know how to do. And so we're going to be kind of tackling this today. This is a huge, huge, huge deal. And the truth is that those questions reveal some really deep spiritual issues. In fact, I was reminded of this week. I received an email from somebody who's not at all been connected to the context of our journey at all, but had talked to somebody who was, and they just decided to email me and tell me how, you know, this person should not be going home. I mean, this person, do you know how bad they are? Do you know what they've done? Do you know their history, their past? And at first I'm like, oh my word, I can't believe I'm getting this. Then it just reminded me. Hey, if you've been on a journey where you're making your way back home, there are going to be people who will tell you that you have to earn it. And you got to earn it. You got to spiritually belly up to the table, and you need to work your way back to God. This person had no comprehension that this is something that can simply be received. Simply received. And maybe last weekend you received this key and got that declaration, and you know, for a day or two you would claim some new ground, you would begin to work toward home, and yet maybe Tuesday came around and you woke up, and in your mind you're like, you know, is that all there really is? I mean, surely I have to work something or do something or try harder, or you know, and you began to regress back to a place where you're now seeking approval, or maybe you wondered, you know, how far does God's grace really go? I mean, is it a one-time deal and I'm out, or can I go back again and again and again? Well, listen, I know you wrestle with this, and you know how I know that? Because I wrestle with this. These are the thoughts I've had this week, and so if that's where you found yourself, I want you to take a look at the screens and get a picture of what it looks like when you come home.
You start to wake up from the best night's sleep of your life, and it takes a second to remember where you are. You keep your eyes closed, trying to remember. Then it comes back to you. Last night, you came home. Was that all just a dream? And then everything floods back. How scared you were to return. How ashamed. How unworthy. But when your dad saw you coming, he ran to you and gathered you in his arms, nearly crushing you in his embrace. You had been living as an orphan for so long, you had forgotten what it felt like to be loved. But he welcomed you home like a treasured child. Then he laid the most lavish table and threw a party in your honor. Even though you didn't deserve it, all was forgiven. You keep your eyes closed, reliving those moments, not wanting to wake up. But then you remember all the things you've done, all the ways you've wronged him. No one could really forgive all that, could they? You listen and realize the house is so quiet now. Too quiet. The calm before the storm. You know your father must be furious now that he's had time to sleep on it. You would be. You imagine him up all night, getting angrier and angrier. You feel sure the punishment you deserve will be waiting for you downstairs. Panic pills in your chest. And you squeeze your eyes shut tighter. You want to grab your stuff and bolt for the window and not have to face him. But you know you have nowhere to run. So you steel yourself for the inevitable. You start to ready comebacks and excuses, practicing your I'm sorry speech. Maybe you can still convince him to let you hang around as a hired hand. Anything would be better than the life you left behind. You open your eyes. Something is tied to the foot of your bed. It's a letter. A love letter. His love, the love of God for you, is written everywhere.
you to know how much I love you. Last night was just the beginning. I'm always going to be with you. And I'm strong enough to save you, no matter what. You make me smile from ear to ear. My heart literally sings over you. And that's how much I love you. I've chosen you to be part of the holy family I love. My home is now with you. I'm going to live with you, and you with me. Even if you walk out again, I'll never give up on you. I created you just by speaking, and you, out of all creation, are my prized possession, my masterpiece. Even if everyone else rejects you, you will always have a place with me. I chose you. I'm bringing you to a place of abundance. I rescued you because I delight in you. Even when you are old and gray, I am the one who will sustain you. I have made you, and I will carry you. I will sustain you, and I will rescue you. Because of my love, you can always come home. The plans I have for you are better than you could dream. I will give you a future and a hope. Nothing can separate you from my love. No person or power, no fear or sorrow. Nothing that could ever happen to you in this life is strong enough to separate you from me. I'm the one who will fight for you against all your enemies, and I will win. I will chase you down with goodness and mercy all the days of your life, and you will live with me in my house forever. Welcome home. My table is laid for you, and there is a banner always hanging in your honor. It says love. Thank you.
Yes, I mean, that's how your Heavenly Father feels for you right there. In fact, this is what your Heavenly Father says about you right here. And, you know, it's one of those things that sometimes we wonder this, we question this. And today I really want to give you a picture of what it looks like to be at the table. Because at this table, there are no perfect people allowed. In fact, this table is a table for people who are like, you know, I'm a bit needy. I mean, I'm not codependent, but I have some needs. There's actually some places in my life where I need to receive. And so today, I want to just kind of, for the rest of our time, give us a picture of what it looks like to have a seat at this table, what it looks like to be in this place, to receive this invitation, which is, has nothing to do with my merit and is solely because Jesus has performed for me. And when this happens, there's actually three things that we begin to experience. The first is this. The first is at the table, you receive the Father's presence. You know, I will never forget as a kid, one of my favorite moments growing up was we'd come home from school when we were like elementary age, be out in the neighborhood playing, and when it got time for dinner in our home, our family had this huge, huge black cast iron dinner bell. My dad would ring that bell, and you could hear it all over the neighborhood. There were four of us boys scattered around the neighborhood, and they would ring this thing. You could hear it a half mile away, and we thought, man, that was pretty cool. Our friends, looking back, I'm like, they had to think that was the stupidest thing. I mean, they're ringing a bell to call their kids in, and yet there was something with that bell. We'd be out playing, and I would hear that bell ring, and I knew that when that bell rung, my dad was home. Because my mom couldn't lift it, all right? It was so big, she couldn't even lift it. So I knew my dad was home, and it was time to eat. And there was something about gathering around this table. This is the table I grew up around right here. Getting around this table, and I knew that something was going to happen. I knew that I would have the presence of my dad there. He'd been off working. My mom worked at different points in our life as well. But I knew that my dad, we'd have presence with our father when we gathered around this table. Now, what's significant about that is this. You know, it's not like I was any less his son when he was off working or when I was off playing or at school. But when we gathered around this table, it was actually actualized. We actually experienced the presence of being with our Father. In fact, the psalmist talks about this in Psalm 16. He says, "You make known to me the path of life. You will fill me with your joy and your presence with eternal pleasures at your right hand." I mean, I just remember that being some of my best memories of being at home was gathering after that dinner bell at the table and knowing that I had presence with my mom, with my dad, with my family. This is one of the benefits. This is one of the things we experience when we receive the invitation to the table. Second thing we experience is you receive the Father's promises. You know, I'll never forget the day. It's very, very clear to me. The day when I made a major mind shift. Can't tell you the day, but I remember how everything changed for me. See, I'd grown up for many, many years with this understanding and expectation that the Bible was really just a bunch of rules, a bunch of laws, a bunch of, you know, rigid things that I've got to interpret, decode, figure out, try to understand, somehow try to live within the framework of. And as long as I do that, then God's going to be a little happier with me. And if I can do it a little better tomorrow than I did today, then God will be much more pleased with me. And I might get a place at the table. And I'll never forget the day when I began to look at the Bible, at these instructions, literally as a love letter to me instead of as these rigid rules and laws. If you see that, it was very clear to me this day when all of a sudden somebody said, you know, this is more of a love letter to you, Kurt, a letter from God your Father to you, sharing these sweet, sweet promises that God has for you. And as I began to take a whole different perspective on the Bible and began to read and receive it in that way, let me tell you what, it took on a whole new meaning. I mean, I just began to experience things I'd never experienced before. In fact, I think this is one of the reasons that back in ancient Jewish culture, whenever parents would introduce the Torah, the scriptures, to their young children, they would make this a very tactile, interactive experience. In fact, they would give them something very sweet. They would give them honey that they would try to help their children associate with the introduction of the Torah. So they made this connection that there's a sweetness that comes with God's love letter to you, and as they're tasting this sweetness. And so this is where you're going to start interacting with your bag right now. So go ahead and grab your bag, take the sticker off, open it up. And there are a number of things inside of there. One of those is a packet of honey. I want you to take that packet of honey out. And, you know, a little bit of context as you're doing. I love the wrestling of the bags. I mean, this is awesome. And, you know, take a packet of honey out. And remember that back in ancient Jewish culture, they didn't have things like Halloween. All right, they didn't have things like the 30 forms of sugar that we have today that, you know, you can fill your body with at any given time. For many of these children in these ancient traditions, this was the very, very first time that they would have tasted something sweet, most likely the very first time they would have tasted honey. And so here's what I want you to do. I want you to tear the corner off your packet and just put a little tip on your finger, a little drop on the tip of your finger, or if you're, you know, germaphobe, then just tear the corner off and you can suck it out of the packet there. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to just taste that sweetness of that honey, and as you do that, let me read for you Psalm 119. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. You know, as sweet as honey would have been to a child back in this ancient Jewish culture, you know, when they tasted that for the first time, I'll tell you what, God's promises are so much sweeter than that. So much sweeter. I mean, you know, in fact, as you're just beginning to experience this, you know, kids at that time would just begin to taste something sweet for the very first time. And in fact, a couple weeks ago, we began to identify some of the promises, some of these sweet promises that we would like to experience from our Heavenly Father in your guidebooks. You worked earlier, about 2 weeks ago, through some promises, and you just were asked to choose one. Choose one of these promises that you want to believe from God. And then you turn the page, and there were a couple corresponding scriptures that went with those promises. I want to read a few of those promises to you. You can keep sucking on the honey if you want. I mean, if you want to suck the whole thing down, go for it. Here, listen to these words. Listen to these words from Isaiah 45. It's in page 34 of your guidebook. I will give you the treasures of darkness, riches stored in secret places, so that you may know that I am the Lord, the God of Israel, who summons you. Get this. Who summons you by name. By name. Have you ever had that moment, you know, where you run into somebody you know out at the store or someplace and you can't remember their name and you're like, hey, it's great to meet you. And then another friend walks up and you're trying to get around the introduction moment because you don't remember their name. I mean, I have those all the time. I you know, there's something, we lie, people lie. It's nice when people remember our names, right? Well, listen, this is God saying right here, hey, the God of Israel, he summons you by name. He knows your name. He actually calls you by name. He doesn't just say, hey, you, hey. He says, hey, Kurt, he knows your name. Summons you by name. A couple scriptures down here. Zephaniah chapter 3. The Lord your God is with you, a mighty warrior who saves. He will take great delight in you. In his love, he will no longer rebuke you, but will rejoice over you with singing. When is the last time somebody rejoiced over you with singing? I mean, somebody just sang you, a serenaded you, you know, singing your name in a song just because they found great delight in you. That's what this is saying here, that God finds such joy, such delight in who you are simply for being his child, that he serenades you. Yesterday afternoon, we had a birthday party for our five-year-old. And typical stuff, a few of her friends, you know, some cupcakes and you know, the traditional birthday song. And when we got to the line in the song as her friends were singing it, happy birthday to, as soon as they said Maggie, man, she lit up. I mean, it was like she just got this big smile. Because how often do you actually have somebody sing over you and sing your name? I mean, this promise says that long will we rebuke you, but I will rejoice over you with singing. On the next page, Psalm 34, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Promise there is he's sorry that you were hurt. I mean, this is one of those phrases that, you know, God, these are sweet, sweet promises right here. I mean, these are amazing things. I mean, these are strong promises. They're sweet. And what's amazing is that we begin to take these in, they begin to change us. In fact, we begin to remove some of the lies that we've known about God as we take in these promises. We begin to replace them with these truths, with these promises. You know, we begin to remove some of the lies that we've always believed about ourselves, that I'm not worthy of God, that I've got to earn my way back to God. And we begin to replace those things with these promises. These things actually cause us to live in reality and begin to believe that God is really who he says he is, and believe what he says about us, that we're cherished, that we're chosen, that we're approved, if we're simply ready to receive it. You know, that video we saw a few moments ago, I don't know if you connected with that or not. I connected really big with that. And if you connected at all with that video, you might need to just watch that like for the next 7 days, every morning when you wake up, just to remind you that, hey, whenever you tend to fall back or slide into that place where you try to begin to seek approval from God or do things to earn acceptance at the table, you just go back to this video, and we're going to let you do that. In fact, we've posted it to our website. It's a free download. Today when you leave, you can go. It's an 8.5-minute video, and you might need to start your day for the next week, the next 2 weeks, the next month, watching this every day and receiving these promises back again and again until they take root and until they begin to change you and you begin to understand this is God's heart for you and this is what God says about me. This is powerful, powerful stuff. And we begin to receive and look at God's promises in the Bible, and not just a bunch of commands, but this is actually God's love letter and his sweet, sweet promises that come our way. So when we come to the table, one of the things we receive at the table is receive the Father's presence, we receive the Father's promises, and then the third thing we receive is the Father's provision. And the Father's provision is an incredible, incredible thing. In fact, the family meal plays hugely into the Father's provision. In fact, you know, the meal experience was an incredibly powerful experience for people back in this ancient Jewish culture. In fact, it had a very, very particular name for this meal. It was called the Passover meal. And every Jewish family would get together one time a year, and they would share and gather around this table, and they would share in this Passover meal. And it was a reminder to themselves that God is faithful, that God will take care of you, that God has saved them. They were reminded when they would share this meal that they used to be slaves in Egypt, but God miraculously reached in and he removed them from that bondage. He took them out to where they didn't have to seek approval. They didn't have to, you know, do things through selfish ambition to try to show that I'm worthy. You know, God took care of appetites and actually freed them and allowed them to go to a new place. And one of the things that we see that happens in this meal is Jesus, he has this incredible way of shedding light on this meal and taking these traditions and kind of taking them to a whole new place. So he kind of co-opts this meal, if you will. He kind of redeems this meal, and he begins to make these connections that actually have to do with him and what he's about to do. Here's what it says in Luke chapter 22. It says, "And he took the bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and gave it to them, saying, 'This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' And likewise the cup after they had eaten, saying, 'This is the cup that is poured out for you. It's the new covenant in my blood.'" And what Jesus was doing right here is he's saying, "Hey, this has been a family meal, but I'm beginning a new family meal right here. This is a brand new meal." In fact, twice he says something very fascinating. Two phrases. He says, "This is specifically for you." He says, "This whole, you know, my body, which is for you." He says, when my blood that's about to be shed, when that happens, it's for you. See, all of a sudden in this moment, he's saying this experience that you have going on right here, that when you receive this, when you come and receive these things, I solely did this for you. And when I begin to receive that, when I begin to realize that it doesn't matter what I've done, you know, it doesn't matter how far away from God I've been, there's nothing that can take me out of my Father's love. And when I realize that it doesn't matter how good I try to be, there's nothing I can do to earn, regardless of my actions either direction, I just realize that all I have to do is receive. And he says, you're actually capturing. You're actually realizing that this is how you receive this place at the table, simply that you have received. In fact, I think this is why the scripture writers talked about this, doing this over and over and over again. In Hebrews chapter 10, we actually see this talked about. It says, "Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. And let us not neglect our meeting together as some people do, but encourage one another, especially now as the day of his return is drawing near." So one of the things that's happened for me around this table, one of the really special things that I've had the privilege to experience, really huge benefit, is that I get the privilege to share, you know, meals around this table with men, with women, with people in my life that are significant, that are like family to me. And so I want to bring you into that a little bit this morning. I want to bring you into that experience. And so I'm going to need a little help with that. And so I've invited a handful of my friends, some of the men that I eat with very regularly, to come join me at the table. And so as they come up here and join me, will you help me in welcoming my buddies to the table today? Come on up here, guys. Now, you know, one of the things that as you see these guys come up here, you might notice that I have a story that's connected to every one of these guys, and you might look at these guys and say, "Wow, well, a couple of these guys look like they don't belong." You know, I don't, some of us have hair and some of us don't, all right? Let's be real clear about the obvious. So, you know, I have a story about each of these guys, but let me introduce them. On the far end is my good friend Angelo Brown, and then next is one of my neighbors, Dave Elkins. Next is my longtime friend John Satinga. Next is another one of my neighbors, Adejua. Adejua is like Madonna, right? So when you reach the status of having a one-name name, you know, like Sonny, Cher, Adejua, and you have arrived. So this is Adejua. This is Adejua. And then I just gave him. They're all calling him Madonna now. So, and then this right here, this is my friend, but this is also my biological brother, Mark Walters. So, Mark, I want to start with you because you're a friend. In fact, we live behind each other right now. I mean, we're still really close. But, you know, this is the table we grew up at. And I know I have a lot of memories about eating here. Breakfast was a big deal. I'm sure you do as well. Just, you know, give us a little picture of what that was like, that table experience for us growing up.
Yeah. Well, I would have to say that I definitely feel like I'm at home right now because this is probably the chair I sat in most nights. You know, there are a ton of memories I could come up with. You know, whether it was, you know, the silliness of our younger brother and all the things our parents had to go through to get him just to eat food. I'd say one of the biggest things that I always remember is being the fact that there are four of us, four boys in the family. Food was hard to come by. And so we were all active. We were all in sports. And so when the food was on the table, you had to go at it.
You did not wait around and you didn't eat,
yeah,
right?
Especially you.
Because I could eat. I can eat. I still eat. I eat like I don't run, right? So, I mean, yeah.
I was like the lightweight when it came to eating, but I still had to. So there wasn't a lot of talking when we were eating. You were missing out. So, you know, I still... Barb tells me that I eat too fast, but I think I'm still in that mode of like, well, I gotta get my food. You know, I have to fight her off, or I at least have to think that. So, but you know, the biggest thing I remember as well is it was actually a family dinner. That was one thing that our parents, you know, mom and dad really made sure of is, you know, whenever we could, as often as possible, we'd be sitting down together as a family. And whether it was just, you know, sharing about the day or not talking at all or bickering at each other about something, at least we were doing it together. And so
that's part,
you know,
of family,
that,
right?
Yeah, and that really has played a big part in my life now with my own family. Is that's one thing we make sure we do is eat as often as we can together.
Exactly.
So
that's awesome. Now a couple of my what I would call really long-term friends. You know, Angelo and John, I've probably known for upwards of 18 to 20, 22 years maybe in that range. And I mean, these guys, these are the only two guys other than my brother I've had breakfast in my PJs with. All right. And so they might talk about that. I don't know. These guys are significant. I mean, they're like kind of like second dads to my kids. I mean, you know, when I can't pick my kids up from preschool or Julie can't, usually their first question is, John's Tinga picking us up today? I mean, because John plays that role in our lives. And Angelo, likewise. I mean, Angelo stays with our kids when we're away at times, really played significant roles in my life. Share with us a little bit of what that's looked like for you guys.
Yeah, it's been a very significant friendship and relationship for me. Aside from the pajama, I'm sure Julie would probably prefer we don't go into that. But the vacations together, and so do enjoy picking up his kids. I like seeing the smile of those kids when I pick them up. But Kurt knows my family very well. I know his family very well. Probably knows me as well as any person outside of my wife. Probably knows me as well as anybody else. Probably knows my strengths and weaknesses better than I know my own. And so it's good to have people like that in your life that are able to speak into you. And you know, it's been very significant for me. Kurt's showing up at my house late at night. You know, when I've been struggling with stuff, he might show up and just said, hey, let's go get some coffee, let's talk. And so it's hard to put that into words, you know, how important that's been. I was talking to Mark in the back before, and I said, I don't know how do I sum up 16, 18 years and, you know, in 45 seconds, and I wasn't sure I wanted to do it, but then I heard Angelo was going to have food, so.
Exactly.
I'm in.
Because Angelo is the chef, and food is obviously not just for you, it's an essential part of our relationship as well.
Yes.
I told him, man, they're getting two meals today, all right? I mean,
I've known Kurt for a long time, and I've been a part of the evolution of Kurt.
That's exactly right.
And so, you know, the cool thing about that relationship is that, you know, we've not put each other in a box. You know, a lot of times when you're in friendship with people, you put each other in a box, and when people change, you know, you give each other a hard time or whatever that might mean. But I think we've grown together. We've stumbled together. We've encouraged each other, and that's been really beneficial to me. And I'm very thankful. You know, Kurt is truly one of the closest friends I have, and I've cherished that friendship for many years. So yeah, it's been
awesome.
Wonderful.
It's been likewise. You know, Let me talk a little bit with Dave and Adejua. You know, these guys, we share community because our houses all back up to one another. And so, you know, for the last 5.5, almost 6 years, we've lived there. I know you guys have been there longer, but talk a little bit about what that's looked like for you. Because I know we've all been at different levels of actually having spiritual community, and that's taken a whole new level over the last few years.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because you think you have a plan, and it doesn't happen that way. And when we built our house in 2003, we were the first ones in our little area. And it wasn't long after, then Mark and his family moved in, and then Adejua and his family, and then Kurt. Kurt was the last one in. But I had this dream of, like, seeing a couple kids running around in a fence, you know, and not on purpose, not to segregate from anybody, but just that's what I had a vision of. And then it's turned into no fence. There's 12 kids running around in our backyard. And it's just wonderful. I mean, this is like an extended family. We've gotten to know each other so well, and it goes beyond church. It goes beyond friendships and neighbors. I mean, we trust each other with our kids' lives, and it goes well beyond what I thought it would be. And so we got an agreement that if one of us hit the lottery and we're going to move, we have to move the whole gang. Everybody gets a house. Everybody gets to go.
I mean, talk about pressure to move out of the neighborhood, right? I mean, it's like who's going to be the first one, right?
We got to play first.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, we got to play to win, right? Yeah.
And we're not kidding about that. We've had that conversation on multiple occasions, so it's been a lot of fun. And our backyard, it's really, you know, it really is a large extended family. It's just like an extension of Cross Point itself. Let's say we eat together a lot. And it reminded me of the time when Kurt first moved in, and I'd already met these other guys, and it was snowing, there was snow on the ground, it was winter, obviously, and Kurt had a trail going from his house to Mark's house in the snow. Looking at the back saying, oh, must be somebody that he knows, you know? And they were back and forth. There was food going around. And if you look at it today between our yards and all our kids playing, the trail is like this all over the place, just going from house to house to house because it's, you know, it's just a great place for us all to be.
Yeah, exactly. You know, see, when I'm with these guys right here, I'm as related to these guys as I am to this guy right here. I mean, even though this is my biological brother, you know, through blood, because of the blood of Jesus, because this is a spiritual family now, and these guys are part of the spiritual family, I'm as connected with them as I am with him. All who receive it have the right to become children of God. And so we're having a great meal, by the way, up here. And as we're doing that, I want to invite you into this a little bit. So go ahead and take your bags out. And inside, there's a biscuit in there. Go ahead and take your biscuit out. And hopefully you have some honey left as well, because I can guarantee you that biscuit's going to be a lot better with honey. But you know this is interesting. I want you to go ahead and begin to eat that so you can get a foretaste of this. For some of us here this morning, you know, this may be a foretaste of what it means to be a part of a bigger family. Maybe you've never been a part of a bigger family. Maybe you're just now, as you're taking a bite of this, getting a taste of what it's like to have a bigger family than just your biological family. And right now, this doesn't mean any more to you than that. It's simply just food that you're eating, and you're like, man, it's good. It's pretty good food. Probably not as good as our food, but it's pretty good food. And you're getting a taste of what that looks like. You know, for some of you right now, you might be getting a first taste. You might be saying, you know what, man, I've actually received, and during this journey, I've received from God. In fact, maybe even this morning, you're saying, you know what, I've learned that the only way to get at this table is to simply receive from the Father. And all of a sudden, this meal begins to take on a whole new meaning, because there's a symbolism with this. There's a purpose and a meaning behind this bread and even the juice, the cup, that these guys, this experience is like my extended spiritual family. And we're as close as biological blood because of the blood of Jesus. And so if that's where you are, maybe for the first time you're eating this meal and realizing and tasting that you're a part of a bigger family. And there's a blood, Jesus' blood, that ties this together. Maybe for some of us this morning, you know, we've received before. Maybe it's got a little stale for us. Maybe we've fallen into older brother tendencies, and we found ourselves, you know, just thinking, man, I just got to earn my way back. I know God isn't happy with this, and if I could just do more, be a little better, you know, we begin to make the long laundry list of how God can never accept me. And maybe for the first time, you need to just eat and be reminded that there's a sweetness that comes. at this table. There's a commonality that's shared when we eat. And maybe you need to take out the juice and just drink a bit of that as a fresh reminder of what Jesus is doing and how this message is one that connects into the deepest needs of our lives for approval and for appetite. And right now, you're just tasting this. Because what I want you to know is there's a place at the table at the family of God if you're ready to receive it. And some of us, we might just be eating this right now, and that's all it means. But for others of us, we're actually realizing this is the thing that connects me to the blood and the body of Jesus right here. Now, there's another way we can receive. In fact, I'm in a men's group. I'm in a small group. Nevin's been in a men's group through this journey. It's really kind of cool. We had a conversation a week and a half ago where one of the guys in our group was just talking about how he struggles, man. He just like the rest of us, struggles feeling at home from hour to hour at times, just struggles feeling like I'm at home, and then an hour later, I feel like I'm not at home. I'm in that place where I need to seek approval. And one of the other guys in our group said something really fascinating. He said, you know, I've been there. I've experienced that. He said, one of the things that helps me deal with that is, he said, I listen when I'm in the car. I just turn my radio on to like K-Love 101.9 or Air One 90.5, I believe. He said, I just listen to some of the songs that we sing on weekends, and that really encourages me. He said, it's amazing how it takes me from feeling not at home back to home. And I thought, as I was thinking about that, I thought, you know, I've been developing a playlist over the last 5 weeks that I've been putting on when our small group comes to our home, and I put it on. Over the past week, I've been walking a lot over the last week over my lunch hour. I had a minor knee surgery like a week and a half ago, and so I've been going out and walking over the lunch hour, and I've been listening to this playlist, and it's all the songs that have to do with home. And as I listen to these songs, I realize, man, these things transport me back to these huge key principles that I've been learning and growing in over the past few weeks. And so we've actually uploaded that list. We aren't giving you the songs because we can't legally do that. We're giving you the list and artists so you can begin to create your own playlist. Maybe that's one of the ways you can continue to receive, and it can encourage you and take you back to the table. One of the things I want to ask you to do, you received a connection card when you came in today, and on the back of that are some next steps. I'm going to ask you to, over the next few minutes, just take that and read through those. A number of those have to do with the rhythm of the journey, but you know, one of those specifically has to do with, you know, maybe you've come to this point and you've just said, you know, I'm at home now. I've realized I've received from God, and there's nothing I can do. And even the meaning you began to put behind what you ate and drank, this table experience, wasn't just eating a meal any longer, but it was, you know, this actually is connecting me with my spiritual family. If that's where you are, just mark that on that card. We want to celebrate that with you. And we're going to sing as we close this table down right here. And, you know, PJ wrote a song that began for your children, if I remember right, in terms of this idea that's called Finally Home. And began to realize this has huge, huge implications for what we're talking about today, what we've been talking about through this series. So he's going to lead us through that here in a moment. I want this to be more than just words. I want you to take that idea of music and allow these words to really build into us as we sing, as we maybe continue to share, eat the biscuit, drink juice. That these things build into us. And so I'm going to let these guys at the table go. Trust me, I've heard them sing before. I don't think you want to hear them sing. But as they go, let's engage with this song. Let's allow these words to build into us and remind us that there is a place called home.